Hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to our INE, Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology, monthly office hours call for practitioners. And this is a call where people in our variety of practitioner training, whether you're in our nutritional endocrinology full certification, our insulin resistance program, our clinical mastery of the digestive system, any of those programs would qualify you to be here on this call. And these calls are open to asking questions about your program, about the content, to bringing up particular people you might be working with, cases that you have questions about, or any general questions for helping you to be a better practitioner. I'm super excited, and all of you guys have bonus tickets to our Shine event, so I'm hoping to get to meet or see some of you there. So go ahead and type in the chat if you're planning to come to Shine. We'd like, love to know, let you know that. If you're on the fence about coming, if you're in Austin, just do it. If you're not, then check out the flights and all that. And hopefully we're going to be doing a live stream for those of you who can't make it, and we'll let you know that. Our decision is going to be to let you know by Friday if we're going to go with that, which we're pretty likely are at this point. So the way that this works is you can type questions into the Q&A, and I look to see if there's anybody that sent anything in advance, and I don't see that. And then we look into the chat. Michelle, yay, I'm planning to attend. I'm in Austin. Yay, I can't wait. It's only a little over a week away, and I've been working like crazy on creating my flow and my content and things that I just keep. Well, I'm a constant learner, as you guys may know, and I've just got a whole bunch of new things that I want to add on some herbal approaches that I want to add to the content. So I'm busily adding all that stuff from a recent CME credit course that I attended over the last weekend. So I'm excited. I'm excited to meet you guys there. I'm excited to just share in the energy of us really getting out there and changing the world of healthcare, because Lord knows it needs it. So if you have any questions, I'd love it if you raise your hand if you're on the phone, and that would be a star 2 on your telephone keypad, or hit the raise hand button if you're on the web. If you're just listening on the web, we won't be able to ask you. You will be able to ask questions because you're not hooked up with a microphone, but you can type questions in either to the chat or the Q&A. And State, is that you, Michelle, State Farm Insurance? That must be, because Nanette is the other one on there on the, well, maybe you're not on the phone. Maybe you're just on the chat. Got it. Yeah, I can't. The ones on the chat, I have no idea. That nobody tells me who's there. They don't tell me who's there. All right, so questions, comments. I'd love to hear how you're doing with whichever program you are in. If you're in, especially if you're in IRSPT, because we just recently had started that a couple of months ago, back in June. I guess it's more than a couple of months ago, but we started that, and I'd love to hear where you're at with that and how things are going. I recently, I don't know if you're on the call or not, you might not because you're working. I recently did a talk here locally at the Natural Grocers. I know there's Natural Grocers and National Chain. And they had me come in and talk about keto and fasting and intermittent fasting and things like that. And I had a really nice audience of about 17 people. But our host, who works at Natural Grocers, is actually a student in our IRSPT class. And she just told me her own personal experience of using the information on herself, and phenomenal results, basically, of reversing her diabetes. Her blood sugars had been in the 140s, I think she said, like 146, 147 was her fasting blood sugar. And she tried many other approaches that weren't working for her, nutritional approaches. And once she got started in the practice, putting into place for herself the IRSPT stuff, her blood sugars are now in the 80s, and she's thrilled. So this is the kind of results you can see for yourself, and then when you get excited about seeing it for yourself, you're going to be passing it on to your clients. So it's a novel approach, and for getting people empowered to take charge of their own blood glucose and measure, and not a lot of people are doing it. right now these days. In other words, a lot of practitioners are not teaching it. So you'll be at the cutting edge, and I think that that's a good thing to be, especially when you start to get the results that you will get. So star two raises your hand, and then in the Q&A you can type in, and I see some questions in there now. So Angelica, can we review the vitamin C protocol for taking therapeutic high doses? My bowel tolerance is about 25 grams of buffered, so my therapeutic dose is 18. Does that mean I should take 18 grams of buffered every day, or may take 18 grams of regular, like Health Force is truly natural? That's a great question. Okay, so the process is the vitamin C flush, and we teach it in the program. And you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. We teach it in the program. You basically start by taking vitamin C every 15 minutes or so, and you're going to, 15 minutes to a half an hour, you're going to take a gram or so, and you just keep taking it until you get that really watery diarrhea, like you had an enema. And then once you do that, then you know that that's the max you took. So you say, in Angelica's case, it's 25 grams she took. And then you take 75% of that would be your therapeutic dose. So then following that, you would be taking it. And yeah, you would be taking that every day, but it might go down. It might actually go up, because sometimes it does go up when the body goes, ooh, look at all that vitamin C, and it finds other uses for it. So I recommend repeating it. Like, you know, Dr. Jaffe, who I learned it from, he said he does it every week. But in reality, I think that that's impractical. Once a month might be good initially, because it will go down. But the other thing is to just have people pay attention, because if you start to take that therapeutic dose of 18 grams every day, you might start to, like, after a week or two go, ooh, I'm getting a little loose stools. That means that your bowel tolerance has gone down, that your body has actually replenished some of the store, you know, some of the functions that, because there's no stores of vitamin C per se, but the functions that may have been neglected will then be, you know, happening, and then you don't need quite as much. Some people need to keep taking that. I know when I first learned about this back in, I don't know, it was 1980 something, and it was, I went to a Jeffrey Bland conference. It was some nutritional conference, and I met a doctor who was Dr. Cathcart, who is in, I think, still in the Los Gatos area, in Los Gatos in California, and I met him at this seminar. It was in California, and he told me how he had first learned about vitamin C reading Linus Pauling, decided to go ahead and try this himself, and he ended up needing 60 grams, and he was doing it because he was getting chronic infections. Every couple months he was getting another sinus infection, other kind of infections, and he wanted to nip it in the bud. But what he found was when he got up to those therapeutic doses, his therapeutic dose, which was 60 grams a day, and I'll tell you how you would go about taking that. He basically said he didn't expect it, but all his allergy symptoms went away. And as he started to try over the years to lower that dose, when he got much below 60, his allergy symptoms would come back. So he was, when I spoke to him, it had been years that he had already been on this 60 gram a day dose. And the way you take a 60 gram a day dose is you put it into water, right? You say, you know, you take your water for the day. Say it's 2 quarts of water you're going to drink over the course of the day. You put your vitamin C in there, and then you just sip it throughout the day. Because otherwise, taking 60 grams, it's just a lot of vitamin C. In terms of which you can take, the buffered is good. The vitamin C, the Health Force Truly Natural Vitamin C powder is great, but you have to take probably a whole bottle to get 18 grams, because it's very low dose. Now, it may work, but I don't know, because I wouldn't know how to titrate and calculate the dose. The vitamin C is like from acerola and from amla and from other natural whole foods, and so each capsule or serving of that is only about 250 or 500 milligrams, which may be equivalent to taking the buffered, because it's in whole natural form, but I just don't know. I just don't think there's the studies to show that. Good question. Okay, Nanette, having trouble getting into my class. I was going to Sweet Spot without knowing it. When I'm signing in, I'm having trouble. Can you send me the original sign up? Okay, so I'll have, let me just take your name and I'll put it in the chat for my tech person. But you have two separate websites. One is you get access to the IME site, which is the practitioner site, and that's where the insulin resistance program is. And then you also get access to Sweet Spot, which is on our consumer side. We set it up initially so that you have the same password on both. Now, if you go ahead and change your password from the crazy, you know, random password that gets generated into the, like something that you recognize, that's going to be, I don't know that it gets changed. You have to change it on both sides. You have to make sure you change it on both sides. So you may, and maybe that you just have a different password on each of those sides. So I'm not sure which side you're having trouble getting into, but I can have our customer support look it up in our database, in your record, and then resend it to you. The other thing you can do is just go into the site and where it says lost password, just click that and it will send you a password reset link and you can reset your password. So give that a try, Nanette, but I'm going to do this right now. I'm just going to take your information and I'm going to pass it on to my customer support person. Christina is usually on unless she's on vacation, in which case it might be Carolyn or Andy, who cover for her when she's away. So let me give you this. Okay. Oh, it didn't show. Let me just go back here one more time. And it did not show your email, even though I copied it, it just showed that you did it. Okay. Me, and you're in Mexico. That shouldn't make a difference, though. Oh, yeah, no, it did show. It did show. I'll just put it in there again just to make sure. All right, so we'll get that taken care of so that you can get in there. But go ahead and try it with the reset, the lost password, and that should help you to get into both programs. It won't let me open anything but module one. So, Nanette, what you need to do is you need to finish module one to open module two. I think that's how it's set up. So I think you have to go through module one and then click off all the finish the test at the end of module one and then it opens module two. I'll have our tech, our customer support person get in touch with you and make sure that you get access. So I'm sending this to her too. All right. So make sure she has that information and we'll have somebody get back to you on that. All right. So chat. Oh, you can get in, but yeah. So check it out to see if you just go to the end of the thing and check it off and make sure I think there's a test at the end of each module. So you have to take the test at the end of each module to go on to the next one. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. All right. Who else? Questions? Comments? I don't see anything. It's just a quiet day today, which I don't mind because if we have to have a short call, I have lots of prep work to do. Anybody else? Questions or comments? No? No? Interesting. Usually we have a ton of people on these calls. You guys did get a reminder, right? Did you get a reminder? Type it in the chat and let me know if you got a reminder email. We usually do that. Send those out. Make sure that got through to you. I'm just going to go look at my email. Yeah, you got a reminder. Okay. I guess everybody's busy for some reason today. Because usually we get lots of people on these calls. So, all right. And they're open office hours. So it just means come and ask questions. If you don't have questions, you don't have to come. But there's usually, even if you don't have questions, these are good questions to calls to come to. Because, yeah, like Michelle just said, I don't have any questions, but I love to listen sometimes. Yeah, because there's a lot of good stuff. Somebody wrote in, I have a question to submit. I don't know who that is. So, but if you have a question, yes, you did get the reminder. Just type it in and I'll answer it. Let me do this. Okay, got another one. Chris, I'm about to take a client with full-blown diabetes. I don't know if in the course is what to do to get them off the meds, how to deal with this. Here's the thing. Okay, if they're type 1 and they're on insulin, you've got to monitor them really carefully because their need for insulin may go down. So I would make sure that they're in touch with their doctor to be aware that they're doing some major dietary changes. We cannot, as health coaches or anybody but the prescribing MD who prescribed the medications, cannot get them off medication. So I repeat that. So using that language could get you into trouble. You can help them with their diet and lifestyle and supplementation that is going to reduce their need for medication, but they need to be working with their doctor. So I always recommend if you've got somebody with diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, if they're on any medication, that you let them know what we do here works. I can't guarantee how quickly. I don't know how long it's going to take. For some people, within a week, their blood sugars drop down into normal, and if they're on medication, it can actually go too low. I remember warning a client this many years ago, and his blood sugars were in the 220s, and he was on 3 medications, and his blood sugars were still in the 220s, and they were threatening he's going to have to go on insulin. He didn't want to go on insulin. So he came to see me, and I said, look, You've got to monitor much more regularly because your blood sugars will go down. And I just want to make sure they don't go down too low. So make sure you're in touch with your doctor, that you know what to do if it starts to go too low in terms of getting a decreased prescription or whatnot. And he goes, oh, yeah, that won't happen. He calls me back 5 days later. 5 days later, his blood sugar fasting was 72. 5 days later. Okay, so it can happen quickly, and you've got to warn them, and you've got to let them know. The ones I've most successfully worked with, they've let their doctors know, and the doctor said, okay, if it starts to go too low, lower by this much, this much, this much. Now, I worked with somebody on insulin and metformin, and his doctor said, let's go with the insulin first, so this is how much you can cut it down each day. So as it goes down, then you go down, and he did, and within 2 weeks, he was off the insulin, and within 3 weeks, he was off the metformin as well. So it can happen, but make sure that they check in with their doctor. Okay? I can't stress that enough, because what you don't want is them to be on either insulin or metformin or whatever other medication they're taking, and to find that suddenly they go into and they pass out because they get too low. All right. And most of these people know how to deal with that. They're going to monitor, and they're going to see it go low, and they're going to, you know, take sugar cubes or something. But we'd like to avoid that. Why have them take sugar cubes to bring it back up when all they had to do was lower their medication? So have them have that conversation with their doctor. Great question, Chris. And good luck with that. And just keep any questions you have, just come to the calls, post it in the Facebook group. And the Facebook group, there's tons of people who have taken people through these things and can answer you rather quickly. Gail. Hey, yay. Love the course and these calls. Thank you, Gail. Are you coming to Shine? You're from Myrtle Beach. I love to meet you guys. I love it when we get to meet each other at Shine. It's so fun. All right. Let me refresh that again. Super. Okay, Chris. Okay, good. If they don't have a glucometer, they must get one. If they are diabetic and they don't get a glucometer, something screwy with their care, because everybody who's diabetic is recommended to get a glucometer and to minimally be testing their fasting blood sugar and their 2-hour postprandial. You're going to want them to be testing a lot more than their 2-hour postprandial. You'll want their fasting there before each meal, and then the way we teach it, which initially is every 15 to 20 minutes, just so you can get a reading. When they start to remove those trigger foods that are causing their sugars to go up, they're going to see changes really quickly. So, yeah, if they don't have a glucometer, they must get a glucometer. Must, yes. Absolutely. I'm surprised if they don't, because that's usually part of the prescription, right? Here's your medication. Here's your glucometer. You know, send me the numbers. And if they can, if they can, get their doctor to get them a prescription for a continuous glucose meter, like either the Freestyle Libre or the Dexcom, that would be super, super helpful. Then they don't have to be pricking all the time. Okay? So who's here? Raise your hand, *2, or if you are, let me see, I'm on lecture. I'm going to put you in Q&A mode. So just in case you can't figure out how to do it, there is a *7 that opens your line. So if I don't see that you have your hand raised for whatever reason, sometimes that happens, then just go ahead and do *7 and that'll open your line for you. Anybody else? Let's see. Q&A. I'm super excited about what we're doing. Nanette, if a person has higher cholesterol than the doctor wants, however has triglycerides are okay, should he start monitoring his sugars after every meal? LDL is 120. He's thin, but I know that doesn't make a difference. What test do you suggest? So cholesterol's high, but triglycerides are okay. I've looked for the triglyceride HDL ratio to see if that HDL is too low. So if the triglycerides to be okay in my book, you know, around 75 is good. A little higher, a little lower, fine. But somewhere in that 75 range for triglycerides is really good. And then for HDLs, what's the HDL? So is the HDL, I like to see the HDL at least 50. Women tend to be able to get their HDLs higher than men for some reason. But I would say 50-ish, I would want it. But you really want it ideally to be a 1-to-1 ratio with their triglycerides. So if triglycerides 75, be nice to get that HDL up to 75. The kinds of things to help their HDL come up would be exercise, and omega-3s. Those tend to be the most important pieces for those, HDLs. So if their fasting glucose or any of their A1C numbers are high, you know, then for sure you want them to be testing. But I would be looking at that. What is his fasting glucose? And I don't know if it's a he or a she. Oh, yeah, he. Yeah, I thought you said he. What is his fasting glucose? And then check his A1C. Is the A1C, you know, in that range where they call it borderline? 5.5, 5.6. I'd really love to see the A1C 4.8 to 5.2. range would be really good. So look at that. And then if you're concerned, you know, because maybe he has a family history of diabetes or, you know, some of this other stuff, then I would be looking at his insulin levels as well. Being thin doesn't make a difference. I've seen majorly insulin resistant people be thin because there's so many other things that play in. So yeah, test wise, I would get his hemoglobin A1C. I would get his fasting insulin. And you may even want to get his C-peptide, because those are good numbers, and then see where he's at with all of those. Good question. Okay, let's see if anybody else typed in here. Gail. And guys, don't be afraid to take on people with full-blown diabetes. This is where we can make such a huge difference, because these people, they have fallen through the cracks for decades. That's why they're already full-blown diabetics. If they had been checked the way that we're teaching you to check early on, with looking at these early indicators and looking at their postprandial glucoses and getting their diet changed, they may not end up being a full-blown diabetic. So don't let these guys scare you. Just really make sure that if they're on medications that you're working with their doctor, that they're working with their doctor to get the medications so they know what to do if the fat glucose goes down. And I'm a little, I'm more careful about low numbers with somebody who's on medication, whether it be insulin or, you know, oral, glucose lowering like, metformin, because they're artificially lowering it, right? So if somebody who's just working with diet and their blood sugars were high-ish and now they're going down in the 70s and they feel good, I'm not concerned, right? But if somebody who's on insulin or metformin and their levels drop into the 70s, I want them talking to their doctor about getting that medication lowered, right? So my threshold is different depending on whether they're on medication or not, okay? And we've seen diabetics get their numbers down within weeks literally very, very quickly. So you can have such an impact on these people's quality of life, on their future quality of life in terms of the dangers that can happen with their eyes and with their feet, you know, with the peripheral neuropathies and, you know, the people that end up with amputations, right? We can prevent that stuff by working with these people, whether they're early on, especially great to get with them early on, or later. Absolutely. Good stuff. Okay, chat. C-peptide is, it's a test that's not done often. It's usually only done when a doctor is suspecting that the person is their pancreas is not functioning properly, not making enough insulin. And a lot of times what we see is we see type 2 diabetics that, I don't want to say this, I'm just going to say this in quotes, turn into type 1 diabetics in terms of type 2 diabetics are making too much insulin, making too much insulin, making too much insulin, right? And so they get insulin resistant and then their blood sugars go up. So what can happen over time is that the pancreas then gets burned out because for years they've been spitting out lots of insulin. I mean, I've seen people who've had fasting insulin levels in the 20s and 30s when it should be 5 or less. Right? And over time, the pancreas gets burned out, and then it just can't make it anymore. So we look at the insulin levels, but also the C-peptide, which is a constituent. It's a protein constituent that is a byproduct of insulin creation. And if it's low, it's saying that the pancreas is not able to make very much insulin. So even if somebody's on insulin, you can't really test their insulin levels and get a good, accurate number because it's artificial. You don't know what they're making, but the C-peptide will give you a good number. Okay, that's good. Let's see. Anybody else? I'm going to do a refresh. Nope. Hands up? No? Okay, Nanette.
Yeah. Hi. I've asked you a similar question before, but okay. It's just a little more in depth.
Okay.
When a person's numbers are good, at
numbers
least
are good
now,
meaning their cholesterol, meaning their sugars, which
I'm talking about sugars and A1Cs and stuff, and you told me watch if their insulin fasting is rising, and they're still having trouble with tingling in the legs and feet, they never had high blood sugar. But could over their lifetime just insulin surges from low blood sugar and then them not checking have caused the tingling problem?
That's a good question. Usually the tingling happens from high levels of sugar, not insulin. Like there's certain damages that happen from high levels of insulin, like the thickening of the walls and the vessels. And, you know, the high levels of cortisol, some things like that. But with the sugars, the high level of sugar damages those micro vessels and then the nerves and the eyes and in the extremities. So you want to also look, there's other things that can cause that. So if it's bilateral, meaning both sides, then we're looking for more of a systemic thing. So from a structural thing, you want to rule out that they don't have some spinal stenosis, which is, you know, you know what that is. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And so far, the x-rays don't show that. But
there's some things that might be. But also B12 deficiency can cause that.
Okay. Now, in terms of the B12, because the person takes it and takes it fairly, you know, a couple times a day, often shows up higher on a test, but I know there's a B12 test that actually, that's a different test that is better. What test is that doesn't say you're already high in B12?
Yeah, so the test would be methylmalonic acid, MMA, methylmalonic acid. I like urine better than blood. I think it's a little more accurate. But also, you want to look at their MCV, mean corpuscular volume, on their blood tests, right? If that's starting to edge up out of the 80s and into the 90s. But that's not specific for B12. It's more, it could be folate. The other thing you want to look at is homocysteine. Okay. Again, it's not specific for B12. It could be folate or B6. But if that's edging up and the MCV is edging up, then it could be, you know, I would ask what form of B12 are they taking daily?
Methylated,
but are they taking it sublingual, liposomal?
Sublingual.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, whenever, and what
dose? And the MCV has been okay. I mean, it's not edging up 90.
Okay, so it's in
the 80s. We have to look at homocysteine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, homocysteine is not routinely done on lab tests. You usually have to request it unless they know somebody's had a heart attack or they're specific. Some of them will test it. So that's something to look at. And you want to also look at the dose. So it's taken methylated, which is the more active form. And dose-wise, do you know how much?
They were doing 10 mg twice a day.
10 mg?
Yeah.
What?
No, it can't be. I'm thinking they were also taking pregnenolone.
People do that in very rare cases, but that's not.
I will go back and check what they're taking. I'm sorry.
I got to say a gram twice a day, maybe.
Yeah. No.
I mean, a milligram, because it's a microgram dosing.
Right. They can't be taking that.
Yeah, that would be crazy. Yeah. Then I wonder. So I wonder about, sublingual is better than taking a capsule. Sometimes people just take a capsule, and if they don't have good intrinsic factor in their stomach, which as we age, it does get lower, then I would be concerned that it's not getting absorbed. Sublingual, though, sometimes it depends on if it's a little pellet that there's dissolving sublingual, or is it a liquid that they're doing sublingual?
Liquid.
Yeah, so here's my feeling about that. When you take lozenge, it goes and it gets, and you know, as long as you keep it under your tongue, it's going to get absorbed. But with the liquid, it's how do you keep that liquid from getting swallowed? Do you know what I mean?
Not as much is
going to get absorbed that way, and if they then don't have good intrinsic factor. So whenever I see that they're taking a supplement but they're showing signs of deficiency of it, then I'm frequently looking at a different form or a different dose. You may try a liposomal.
Okay.
Or a topical, because, you know, they have the little patches that you can get and have them do topical. And I had people that I had one person, she was taking like 5 milligrams, literally 5 milligrams a day of vitamin C for years. And she just kept having these symptoms, and her lab tests were showing she showed that she was low. And I just had her switch the type and switch the dosing and switch. And she did a topical, and it started working. So everybody's a little different. Yeah. Dr. Amy Yasko always says, she works with autistic kids and does a lot of B12, and she says, get B12 in every orifice you can. Get it in every way you can.
Okay.
So try that and see. But it could be the B12. It may not be. Right? But, it could be.
Okay.
It could be. The other things, when it's bilateral, tingly. Is there pain associated with it, or is it just tingly?
Tingly more than pain. But the description, they say, is very hard to describe. They said it feels like there's a constriction around mid-calf at times. It just feels like it's burning or something. And the tests don't show infections. They don't show anything. No swelling, no anything, which is why it's been hard for the doctors
to figure out.
Look at anything. And
and it is bilateral, right? It's both calves.
Bilateral.
Because I start to think calves, you know, I'm thinking of some sort of a clot. Have they had a Doppler?
No clot. Yeah, Doppler shows no clot. Two Dopplers show no clot. We've been doing this for a while. And I went back to thinking cortisol and cortisone. And I went back to thinking adrenomedulla, not cortex. So there's been increase on C a lot. Because the medulla can play with spider veins and stuff, which they have.
Yeah.
But it's just been a really strange thing because
Yeah. The spider veins versus varicose veins, are they having any varicosities or just the little bitty
ones? Very little varicosity, mostly. Well, there was damage to one vein by an accident. But other than that, very little varicosity, mostly tons of spider veins starting.
And both sides equally?
Both sides. Okay. Left side worse.
That's the side that had the damage?
Yes.
Okay. And what about...
The spider vein started after the damage, but...
Yeah. And they have any other history of injuries? Any other history of trauma?
Well, yeah, they had a broken nose that's messed up their breathing. That when it was fixed, it made it worse, actually. So they're concerned about trying that again. They don't have gallbladder because parasites got that. It wasn't granular. It had been stuck shut for 3 years, the doctor said, when he looked at it after he finally got it out. He just said, that person's got a clean diet, you know. So I just racked my brain to try to figure out if it's more in the cortisone spiking and causing something with the veins, or if it's in the progesterone area, or if it's in,
yeah.
I'm just stuck on tingling.
Yeah, and it's kind of tingling, like, right? Not pain. Is it constant, or is it coming and going?
It's pretty constant tingling, how bad a tingling comes and goes. But the pain, yes, there's pain, but not every day. And it tends to be in the thighs, not the calves. Thighs don't tingle, but they'll get the pain, but only when they lay down at night and want to go to bed. And that might happen to them.
The tingles happen just in bed?
No, the tingles happen during the day. The pain,
oh, the pain
in the thighs happen at night. So it's different symptoms at different times.
Is there any edema in the ankles?
No. No, none. I mean, the doctors keep pressing up and down the leg, and they're like,
nothing.
Well.
Is the person overweight?
Very little. This started when the person was not overweight.
Okay.
It did start about 10 years after their menopause, though.
10 years after menopause.
Yeah, they went through menopause at 55, and around 65, they started noticing more spider veins and that kind of thing.
Any itching? Any skin discoloration changes?
Nope. No itching, no skin discoloration. And they take Diosmina for quite a few years, twice a day, which actually is even more than the doctors suggest. Lots of bioflavonoids, and that Diosmina is what's suggested for that. It's because it's a concentrated, concentrated one. That's what's leading me to believe something else has got to be causing it, because why, if they're doing everything, there should be some improvement. Now, the veins are just gradually getting worse, not big time. They said you don't need an operation, it's...
No.
Just
no, you want to get to the cause. So I'm thinking
the cause,
in the circulation. Right. So venous return, something that's impacting venous return.
I've thought of chakras and got online and looked at what you do to try to clear chakra blockages,
What about lymphatic? Have you palpated or looked at, had them palpate in the area of the groin area to see if there's any swollen lymph nodes there?
No, they were only palpating the lower area, but I know that my right groin area hurts on and off, and my chiropractor years ago had told me the right groin area can be liver at times, and if you drain the liver. So I wondered if my gallbladder started doing things after menopause.
So this is you. So so you're doing all the so I would look at doing the liposomal and seeing if that makes a difference. I would get the amenity.
I've tried liposomal, but I will maybe up the dose of the liposomal.
Oh, you have that liposomal?
Yeah. And I've done vitamin C intravenously.
And in terms of the back, right? You know, I'm just thinking what kind of things can cause a stenosis, right? It would be an injury, but also, you know, some arthritic changes that happen in the canal that may or may not show.
Okay.
I'm trying to think the best way to, you know, you might try. It's not going to hurt. It'll just cost you a little money is to get a chiropractor that does Cox flexion distraction technique.
What's it called?
Cox, C-O-X. Flexion distraction. It's a specific technique that it works really well in stenosis.
Okay.
And
that makes, you just asked me had I had any injuries, and one trip when I had been all over the States, I couldn't walk, and I went to my chiropractor in the States, and he said, your tailbone's out of whack, and he was able to put it back in, and everything went right. So I don't know if that my tailbone could be out causing something.
Yeah, the tailbone generally doesn't. But I mean, it's certainly possible. It depends on where. I mean, I'm thinking bilateral. It wouldn't be like a bilateral sciatic nerve thing because it's usually lower down. And the same thing with the tailbone.
Right.
It's going to be lower down and it'd be to one side or the other.
This is even. I mean, it's
even on the sides. You know, so the central things are, of course, the neuropathy from sugar. And, you know, what's the A1? Have you done your A1Cs and insulins and all that?
Over the years, yeah. You told me to see if they were rising. The insulin was, the A1C was always fine. The insulin has got one. I haven't been back to the States. I haven't found a place in Mexico to get it done. But they weren't bad enough for this. I mean, I look at people.
Well,
that,
you never know, though. You just don't know what's bad enough. And if it's not bad now, was it in the past? And is there some permanent damage? But it sounds like it's further up than the feet. It sounds like there's some compression going on bilaterally.
I go to the chiropractor all the time. I have a kyphosis in my back because when I was young, I was very thin but had very large boobs when I developed, and the chiropractor says, well, your back's always under tension. There's nothing you can do about it. So I don't know if a kyphosis can cause it. I am going to get...
It can create imbalances that could create the wear and tear kind of changes that could affect the canal size.
I went back and looked at 20, 30 years worth of my blood work, because I always say that. And until I took your class, I had been working on getting my blood sugar up because it was always between 77 and about 82 the whole time. And I was looking until I worked on that. And you told me that the blood sugar had nothing to do with why my CO2 was always low. That could be insulin, what do you call that? Metabolic,
alkalosis.
Well, my P's always turn to acid, which when I thought of cortisone, it's always alkaline by the second P. So anyway, I've researched it. And all my questions to Dr. when I was taking classes with him, he's the one who said that it's never been your thyroid, it's been your circulation. But at that time, I didn't have all these symptoms when I was taking classes. You know, it was like 10 years after menopause.
Now, have you been on thyroid medication or done any work on your thyroid?
Yes, I was on it for years because I convinced a doctor to give it to me 30 years ago or more. Because I was cold. My hands and feet were cold. But when we redid things, and I'm still taking a very, very, very small dose of Armour. And now I'm going towards heavy metals and, you know, trying to see why this minuscule dose. I only do the minuscule dose of Armour because it keeps me from getting laryngitis if I have to speak a lot. And I was a teacher for a long time. And Dottis laughed and he said, you should be able to figure out why it's working. And I go, no, I haven't made the connection why this little bit of armor keeps me from getting laryngitis, which could then turn into something. But it works every time. If I'm starting to get something, laryngitis, I will just take a little bit more armor and it goes away.
Interesting. Yeah. Your blood pressure is normal, I'm assuming, right? You check that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you?
Well, now, according to your numbers, my blood pressure was always good, not low.
Okay. Yeah. Good is fine. Good or low versus high. What about vitamin D?
I'm good at keeping that at around 50, but I could up it to 80 and 100 because now they're saying get it higher.
Yeah.
I thought about the vitamin A when you said you had SNPs. I have no idea if I have SNPs, but I usually take vitamin A, but now I'm making sure I do, because maybe I've got SNPs.
But it doesn't hurt. As long as you're not going above like 5,000 a day on vitamin A, you're not going to get the toxic work. I would, you know, I really want to see, have you had an MRI of the low back to see if there is some sort of protrusion in
it? No, I asked the doctor, but he was speaking in Spanish and he knew no English, and the person I was with was not translating well. I wanted to know what, if I should start with my feet, because that's where the tingling started, and come winter, on my right side, if you look at frostbite pictures of toes, it looks just exactly. They swell, they blister, they're on fire.
It sounds like a circulation thing. It really does. Between the spider veins, and that's like a Raynaud's type of thing. Have you looked at autoantibodies at all?
No, I haven't. But do they do stuff on the feet? I mean, do they do MRIs on the feet?
No, I would do it on the feet. It's a central. It's coming from further up. It's not coming from your feet. It's compression on the circulation. This is what I'm feeling. It's either metabolic, but it doesn't sound like it because your vitamin, I would do the MMA just to see. It's either metabolic or it's central, circulation and or nerve impairment. I think it's both probably, which is why I'm thinking an MRI of the low back to see if there are any disc protrusions or any kind of space-occupying lesion that would be pressing on the spinal cord or a protruded disc.
Well, I've had good chiropractic care over the years and periodic x-rays, but the MRI will show different things, I know.
MRI shows very different things, yeah. It shows the soft tissue, so you'd be able to see. I'm thinking I'm out of what else it could be.
Okay, well, you've given me some suggestions here. Change B12, check it out. Next time I'm up, I'm getting a lot of new lab work, so I can compare to, you know.
Yeah, make sure you get complete because it's a long trip for you to come to get the lab work done.
Yeah, so thank you so much. I feel like I'm not totally stupid because you're brilliant, and I
thought of a lot of good things, so don't down yourself on anything. It's challenging. You've thought through a lot of the good stuff, but I would definitely look at, because it seems to me circulation and nerve impairment. The circulation, you know, given the Raynaud's type symptoms that you're getting in the wintertime, the coldness of the extremities and the spider veins, plus the paresthesia is usually a nerve, and it's very common for both a nerve and vessels to be impaired at the same time, to be intruded upon, because they all come through in the same general area. So that's where I would look at, and I would look at the low back, specifically the lower part, because it's, you know, the distribution you're talking about is like sacral L5-ish.
Yeah.
Maybe L4, L5. Yeah. But, yeah.
And the acupuncturist, even years ago before any symptoms, said, you have heavy legs. Now, she had just told me what heavy leg syndrome. And she told me you can't get your chi to move up.
But she isn't moving. Yeah.
So that's why I have had hand acupuncture classes. She said, you know more about this than how to use hand acupuncture. She said, I just don't know where to put everything like she does. But she did say that. That's why you gave me great things to move my toes up and down when I hold my legs over my head.
Yep, that helps with the circulation. There is a book called Simply a Safer Way, and it will show you where, you know, based on symptomatology and stuff, it'll show you kind of acupuncture. It's meant for the lay person to do it with acupuncture beads and whatnot, but it's certainly a good one to have on hand.
Well, thank you so much. You have been quite helpful.
You're very welcome.
Sorry, I'm sorry I monopolized your time.
I'm going to ask those questions because, you know, and
I waited for people to have questions because I didn't wish to do that, you know.
Well, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. It helps, you know, whether you're asking questions about yourself as the patient or whether you're asking about your own patients, it's the same learning opportunity for everybody.
Yes, I've learned from others' questions. It helps a lot.
Yeah.
I learned about the C-peptide more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you so much.
It's not like that's an issue for you, but, you know, you just want to, if you're going to get testing done, you might as well get it all done and rule it all out.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think there's something there in the nerve thing that I just have not.
Yeah. Do you know what your A1C is? Is it in the low fives?
It was in the low fives the last time I had it done.
Yeah. We'll have it done again just in case.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Yes. And I'm going to start doing myself after I want to just get a regular, I've got the keto joint, and I just need to start doing the 30 strips of the sugar one to see if foods are making you spike.
Yeah.
Because no spikes. But you said you have to have high sugar for the tingles.
Yeah,
Does that mean for a long time?
I mean, it can be up and down. So I'll give you an example of someone that was in our inner circle for our patients, and he had consistently his fasting blood sugar was only like, in the 90s. And he finally got an A1C. He was starting to get peripheral neuropathy, the tingling, right? And he got an A1C tested and it was 10. It was 10.
Okay.
But his fasting always went back down to quote unquote normal. He ended up with retinopathies and we're hoping that they're not irreversible. So, you know, it depends on how long it's been there and maybe now it's not. You know what I'm saying? Maybe now you're keeping it under control, but who knows what.
But for years, maybe I was spiking and because I was looking at low numbers. The spiking.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Now, if you have old records, go back and see. But most docs don't do A1C, so you don't even know.
Oh, I order all my blood work.
Good. Good for you for being in charge.
Yeah, no, ever since I started taking Datis 2003, before I had to go somewhere to get the blood work, but I did every year. I got blood work every year because I know the importance. So.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Nanette.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Anybody else have questions? I see a few other people joined us, Lynn Rose and Lynn DJ. Let's see. Oh, Lynn put the Simply a Better, Safer Way. Thank you. And she put the Cox technique in too. Thank you. Yeah, that's something to certainly look into. Cause the Cox technique will actually decompress the spine and will help to take the pressure. I've worked with people. I have literally worked with people who hobbled in my room. My office, unfortunately, is upstairs, so it's not great when people have that kind of pain. Like literally couldn't walk, foot drop, the whole bit. And we did the Cox technique and they walked comfortably down the stairs like 90% better in one treatment. So it works. It works. And this one guy, he had had an injury, fell off a bike, and he had had an MRI and it showed that he actually had a piece of the disc that had popped out and it was extruded is what they call it. And it was hanging out in the space and it was pressing on the spinal nerves. So he had the tingling in the legs. He had a little bit of foot drop and very severe pain in the calf. And he refused to have the surgery. He's a case where I'm like, I don't know if this is going to help, because there's the piece that's floating free. And I've usually worked with people where there wasn't a piece flowing free, just a protrusion, and we're getting it to go back in. And after a couple of weeks, he was feeling great, and he didn't come back. I said, this is something that we need to have regular care and hear from him. Until a couple of years later, I see him at a birthday party. His and my kid had a mutual friend, and he was at one of these birthday parties with a trampoline, and he's jumping up and down on the trampoline. Well, my heart thumped, because I'm like, I know what his MRI looked like. I know what's going on in there. Like, he shouldn't be doing that. He's doing flips. You know, so you just don't know. And, for him, it was an accident, but it could have been anything that caused the disc to protrude. And sometimes people just lean over and tie their shoe and the thing pops and causes problems. So it's expensive. It's not cheap to get an MRI, but it with all the other things you've ruled out, it's certainly something to look at. Okay, let's see. Okay, that's that one. So spider veins and insulin, I don't know of a direct. I think this might be you, Nanette, but in the chat, I'm not sure that I know that there's a direct relationship between spider veins and insulin, other than damage to those little vessels and the nerves and not having proper circulation. I think the spider veins is usually when there's a lot of pressure going down, but the valves, sometimes the valves in the veins are not allowing, it's not keeping things from flowing downward. So there's some problems in the veins oftentimes too. Yep. Anybody else? Let's see. Hey, Lynn Rose. And thank you, Lindy J, for posting those links. Appreciate it. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Let me go to the Q&A and see if there's anything added to here. Okay, Gail. If low DHEA as a result of high cortisol inhibits insulin sensitivity, do you usually supplement with DHEA? I'm leery to do so without knowing enough about dosing. And is there a way to naturally raise DHEA? I suppose it could be sleep, stress management, adrenal support, and lowering cortisol. Correct. All of the above. So if you've actually tested and you do see that pregnenolone is low and the cortisol is high and the DHEA is low, you can safely supplement it. It's especially good if you have a Dutch test, because you can see metabolites. But generally speaking, I've not had a problem with supplementing with DHEA and pregnenolone. Only had one case where pregnenolone supplementation actually caused the thyroid to go hyper. It's a reported possibility. It's very rare. So that's why I always start with really low dosing. I use liquids. There's a company called Biomatrix that has a pregnenolone and DHEA, and it's each drop is only like 1.5 milligrams. Like, a lot of times you see these DHEA supplements in like 25 milligrams. Stay away. What happens anytime you take a hormone is you get the negative inhibition. So the body sees, oh, DHEA is high, don't make any more. It's going to be the opposite of what you want. But if you're supposed to be making a certain amount to keep you in good shape, and you're not making quite that amount, you just give a little tiny bits just to make up the difference while you're supporting the body and its ability to make the stuff. So how do we make more DHEA? Well, we provide more precursor. If someone has high cholesterol but low sex hormones and low DHEA, it could be a B5 deficiency, because that's involved in the conversion from cholesterol to pregnenolone. But it could be pregnenolone steal or cortisol steal. So cortisol is basically the stress hormone, which is like, that's the emergency. So it gets all the precursor and everything else goes low. So the stress management, the adrenal adaptogens are pretty amazing at helping you to support that. Like, you know, rhodiola, I wouldn't do rhodiola with the high cortisol. Well, no, I wouldn't do rhodiola with the high cortisol, but ashwagandha, magnolia, Some of the calming adaptogens can be very helpful, but knowing the curve as well, like where is the cortisol high and are there peaks of cortisol being low or valleys of cortisol being low and adapting, but, you know, you'd be safe with some of the new, the true adaptogens like ashwagandha, especially if there is a thyroid issue going on as well. Ginseng could be helpful, you know, those sorts of things, but also it might be B5 and also, vitamin C can be helpful, but small amounts. Pregnenolone and DHA, you can get sublingual through Biomatrix and start with small amounts. In general, if somebody has a low DHA and high cortisol, you can get as high as, say, like 3 drops, which would be close to 5 milligrams, 2 or 3 times a day, and that might help to suppress the cortisol and take the DHA at the time in the test where the cortisol tends to be the highest. Okay. And yeah, if pregnenolone is low, you can supplement small amounts of pregnenolone. Again, a lot of pregnenolone supplements you'll see are 100 milligrams and that's way too much. I would more start with like, the drop. I think it's 1.5 per drop and I would start with a few and then, you know, you can work your way up all the way to maybe 10. You don't want to get too high on pregnenolone because it's a precursor to cortisol. And if somebody's in a hypersympathetic state, then they may just make all that pregnenolone into more cortisol rather than DHEA. So it's a little tricky and you got to watch. Okay. Let's see. Angelica, I've got oodles of DHEAS. Not sure why yet, but that could explain why I struggle with blood sugar dysregulation. It could be, yeah, it could be. And I would be looking at the testosterone. That's why the Dutch test will be helpful to look at the testosterone as well. I mean, it could be a sort of a subclinical PCOS type of situation, right? So if you're having, I think you mentioned periods, if you have difficulty with periods or the onset of your periods, et cetera. So there may be some PCOS going on there as well. Going through my once a year visit, which lab should I ask for to get more information around the high DHEAS? You can possibly get them to do a testosterone, but you want a free and a full testosterone, but also free. A lot of them will just do the regular testosterone, the protein bound testosterone, and that's not going to give you enough to know. But the Dutch really is the way to go for that. Yeah, and if you're dealing with the blood sugar, I would be doing fasting blood sugar, fasting insulin, A1C, and possibly C-peptide, but maybe not. Getting Dutch soon, yay! Great. All right. I think one of the prizes that we're going to be giving away in the raffle, the day 3 raffle at Shine, is a Dutch test. I'm pretty sure they sent that, so that's pretty cool. All right, so that's that. And let's see if there's any more in the Q&A. Okay, good. And let's see if anybody's hands are up. Okay, Chris, let me open your line. And Nanette, your hand is still up. I think I might not have put it down, but if you have another question, just put it up again. So I'll put it down. I'll go to Chris. And hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry. I just joined the call late a few minutes ago, but but probably you haven't talked about this yet. I was wondering, do you know much about some fully elemental diets like my son with eosinophilic esophagitis? He's, we've really, you know, done all sorts of elimination diets and all that. But, he's still, like, he has certain times that his esophagus just kind of aches and reacts to almost everything, no matter, I mean, you know, even things that were, you know, once tolerated or, you know, just starting to really, like,
yeah,
just give him trouble, like almost, I mean, he really basically can eat like 3 things right now that don't give him, make his esophagus ache. And I don't know. I was thinking about some kind of, like, I got the semi-elemental protein powder that I thought would be okay because he reacts to, you know, most all sorts of protein powders.
Mm.
And he's 18, and so he really needs the calories. But even the semi-elemental it's like making his throat hurt too now. But I don't know much at all about, like,
yeah, so I don't know whether it's semi-elemental or not, but I know that for SIBO, there's a couple of companies that put out an elemental diet. They're not very high quality, in my humble opinion, products. But, you know, when you're down to this point where they can't get anything in and he's 18 and he's not overweight, it sounds like he's probably underweight, right? But,
He's thankfully he's holding on in that category. I mean, he's not over or under right this minute, but
okay,
you know.
So there is a leeway then, if need be. I don't, you know, want him to lose weight necessarily, but if need be. So his esophagus needs a rest, and I think we've talked before, but I don't remember if he has done the slippery elm and DGL and those sorts of things yet.
It hasn't been consistent like it should be, but we've tried almost everything there is. It just seems like, and like right now, the main thing he's doing is like slippery elm. He's doing that a lot. And I don't know. I just get various things but it's just basically, you know, I don't know if I haven't totally been like, you know, getting scopes and things like I'm supposed to be, but because,
you know, I don't know that
that's really
a problem, right? So it's just going
to
confirm that there's a problem. It's not really going to fix
right.
the problem. So I don't hold yourself too hard on yourself over that. But consistency is critical when you want to heal a damaged membrane. Okay.
Yes.
And consistency is very critical, and it could be months of being consistent to get it happening. You can't just take slippery elm every now and then. You can't just take DGL every now and then. All the studies with that show that the first 3 weeks of DGL, you're not going to see that much of a difference. Like, they'll compare it to, you know, somebody takes conventional ulcer medications and somebody takes DGL. But once you pass that like 3 to 4 week range, the DGL is far superior because the ulcer medication isn't fixing the problem. It's just suppressing the acid so it really does need to be consistent. And I know with an 18-year-old, it's hard, but he's in pain and he's suffering. So
allowing
him to know that it needs to be consistent, that this problem will only get worse if he doesn't handle it now, when he's young enough to be able to have more resilience than he would as he gets older, right? And stress is a big piece of it, right? When they get stressed and there's this high level of cortisol, super important. I'm assuming, since he can't eat much of anything, that he doesn't do junk food and alcohol and caffeine and those sorts of things.
Well, no. I mean, he doesn't do alcohol and caffeine, but I mean, he does. I mean, this is the ironic thing that drives me crazy is a lot of just fast food that, you know, his friends, like, you know, they all get. And so he does, you know, he does do that when he's not home. But like, that doesn't give him reaction. It's like all fruits and vegetables it's so very disheartening. I mean, the healthy foods give him more.
The healthy foods give him a problem because they have natural forming acids in there, and it's like a Brillo pad on his tract, and they've got the fiber, and that's like a Brillo pad on his tract. Whereas this highly processed garbage food is interfering with the healing, but there's really no fiber in there to hurt it.
Exactly.
Hard for him because the feedback he's getting from his body is, I'm just going to eat, you know, Wonder Bread and, you know, eat hamburgers and whatnot, and that's going to be fine. But in the long haul, it's not going to be fine, right? Because it's causing more and more trouble. So, you know, how many different protein powders have you tried? And have you tried anything like one simple, like Sacha Inchi protein? That's it. Pumpkin seed protein. Something along the line that's very simple.
Okay, I heard you say before the Sacha Inchi, but I couldn't remember exactly the name of it. Okay, how do you spell that?
S-A-C-H-A-I-N-C-H-I, Inchi, something like that.
Okay,
And get that, then, you know, some kind of soothing oil that's going to, I don't know if he tolerates oils, but like something like coconut oil or MCT oil, which tend to have the ability to heal mucous membranes.
Okay.
And
great.
If it's irritated, it should actually, you know, and that with the slippery elm, the DGL needs to be consistent. Right.
Okay. So what form of DGL, like?
He can get the lozenges, especially since it's up in his esophagus. He can just get the lozenges and let them melt on the way down, right? But it's going to take consistency. Some of the anti-inflammatory type things that have COX-2 inhibitors, et cetera, things like turmeric, but maybe a liposomal turmeric versus the whole turmeric, which could be a little bit it's spicy, it could be aggravating, but the liposomal type turmeric, I think Seeking Health has a liposomal curcumin, something like that can help with the inflammation. But seriously, you know, and really sitting him down, I know how hard it is to work with kids at that age, right? I've had kids at that age, mine is just a tiny bit older, and they don't get it necessarily, but consistency is so important because he's got to heal it. He's got to get it healed. Consistency in a decent diet so he doesn't aggravate it again, and make sure that he's got the that hiatal hernia is a biggie, and if you haven't had him checked by a chiropractor or somebody who knows how to test it differently than doing like an MRI, because it's not going to show up. If it's just subtle, it's not going to show up. But if it's just subtle, it actually is going to be dumping acid into his esophagus and making it worse. So that might be something he needs to get adjusted a couple of times and then learn the self-adjustment technique and do that on a regular basis, like a few times a week.
Okay. That's great. And can you think, is there any, like, way he could take, I mean, is any sort of fruit and vegetable that he possibly in some form that he would not react to that maybe doesn't have the
you know, that's a matter of
enzymes or whatever. I mean,
might be, you know, it's starchy, it's not it doesn't have acid, you know, kind of like all the fruits, cherries and mangoes and all that, they have an acidic component which might be aggravating. And if you're concerned to getting the nutrients, you might even look at, this is a situation where I might look at something like a Juice Plus or something like that, which is encapsulated so it bypasses the irritated area in his esophagus and then gets into his stomach and he gets the nutrients at least. And the same thing with green powders, not in a green powder liquid, but taking capsules like Health Force has, I think it's called Vitamin Earl Green, which could be really good, and it's in capsules, and you have to take a bunch of them and have to see if that aggravates. But generally, you're swallowing it with water, and as long as he does them one at a time, it probably won't irritate the esophagus.
Yeah, that's the only thing. I've got it. Yeah, that would be ideal. He's got, like, a stricture in his esophagus to where he can't get a pill down. Which, yeah, I would love. It actually grieves him that he can't get any vegetables in. He's like, he tells me he can't stand it when he hears people complaining about eating vegetables because
you can't get them in.
He so badly wants to eat them now, you know, like after.
Well, here's what you might try is a powdered green, just start with a powdered green mix.
Okay.
You can also get like cherry juice concentrate powder, you know, there's things like that. You can mix it in with a little bit of coconut oil to make it easier for it to go down, and people can tolerate that in small amounts.
Okay.
And maybe that's multiple times throughout the day in small amounts, but it'll at least get the nutrition into them. It's got to be hard. The liposomal turmeric will probably be a good one. Same thing with vitamin C, liposomal vitamin C. Those kind of things can be very helpful. And then your powders that don't have the fiber, because right now it sounds like the fiber and acid are probably what's aggravating, is my guess.
Yeah. Yes.
And if you can get that mix the oil with it, so it's more of a an oily substance, which is how the liposomals are, then he may have some luck getting some nutrition in. Because then if you can't get the nutrition in, there's no substrate by which to heal it.
I would just put it in
for a while and see if that works with the little bit of coconut oil in there. But then you might try also, if that works, just if it doesn't work, use it yourself. The collagen support that Sun Warrior just came out with, the collagen support 15. And again, small amounts, you know, make it so that, because maybe, does water even bother, like, irritate it?
No, he's okay with that.
So make it thin. Like, if you're giving him a protein powder, start with there. Like, if it's a scoop, it's supposed to be in there, start with a teaspoon.
Okay.
So there's, you know, you can he can build up the tolerance as long as plain water doesn't bother. If it was something where water does bother it, I would have it be something a little gooey or more viscous, like with the coconut oil, with more concentrated. But start with the very light and see. You can try some of the collagen support, because that's going to help the tissue to repair itself.
Yes, that's great. Yes.
Okay.
Definitely do that. Is there, as far as the DGL lozenge, or any of, like, the liposomal turmeric or is there any certain brand that you think is really good?
For the liposomal, I personally use Seeking Health.
Okay.
For DGL lozenges, I would be looking at, I don't know if they have, Vital Nutrients has DGL powder, but I'm thinking if he's not able to tolerate it, powder is, that's usually what I recommend, right? Because it goes down. But the lozenges are good because they can, they release slowly along the esophagus where they need it. I'm looking to see if I can find a brand. You want to look at fructose-free and sugarless enzymatic therapy. That's the thing, is like a lot of them have garbage in them, basically.
Yeah.
This one from Enzymatic Formula. I'm going to look at their ingredients. Where's the ingredients? DGL extracts, use the stomach, no fructose, vegetarians, contains 1% glycyrrhizin to avoid it, which is okay. Directions, warning, does not contain gluten, sugar, salt, yeast, etc. But it doesn't say what additional ingredients are there. 2-3 tablets after food in the evening. I wish it doesn't say that there's anything else in here. It says what it doesn't have, which is all that. So sounds to me like that might be a good one. It's $11. So
and what was that name?
Enzymatic therapy. I'll put a link in the chat. I found this on the Vitamin Shop. Oh, isn't the Vitamin Shop, is that actually Natural Grocers? That might be easy because there's a lot of Natural Grocers around. Let me find this back again. Okay, so chat, I'll put this in the chat and see.
Now, is the chat something you can get when you go back? Can you see the chat? Like if I'm just on the phone call right now.
If you're on the phone, click the link in the email that we sent, and you can do it as soon as we hang up, within like minutes, and the chat will show up there. Let's see.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, let me just get rid of this piece of it because I don't need all that, and try that. Oops, click that. Let me click it and make sure it still goes to the same place. Yeah. Yeah, that one looks good. Okay.
So
yeah.
Enzymatic Therapy from Vitamin Shop.
Yep, Vitamin Shop Enzymatic Therapy DGL lozenges, chewable tablets.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Yay.
Yeah.
And what about the Satcha Inchi? Like, is there a certain...
Satcha Inchi, I was getting it from Raw Food World. I think they stopped carrying it, but now I order it from my son, and I usually just go to Amazon. I know Amazon, people don't want to go to Amazon anymore, but I still shop there because brands, because it's easy.
Me too.
It's easy. That's A-C-H-A-I-N-C-H-I. And there was one that I got him... which he liked. I can look it in my order history because I periodically buy it for him. Satcha Inchi protein powder, Terrasol. on Amazon. It's like $14.99 for 12 ounces. It's really inexpensive. And let me see if that one's the organic. There's another one, Sacha Inchi Powder. Yeah, Sacha Inchi Protein Powder. Yeah, here. I'll just stick this link in there too. It's a page that has, don't get the, you know, there's the chewables and all that, but just get the powder, the protein powder.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
What do you use Claire Labs for, Lynn? I use Claire Labs for some things. I use a lot of different companies, but are you talking DGL specifically or are you talking Sacha Inchi? I didn't know. I can look up Claire. Let's see. Claire. Let's see. I just go for whatever the purest. Claire Labs Mastic Gum. No. Vital. Claire Labs B Complex. I don't see a DGL. I see a Mastic Gum DGL. But unless he has H. pylori, which he might. I don't know if he's ever been checked for it. Mastic Gum would be helpful. It just makes it more expensive.
Okay.
But okay. Yeah, I don't see it.
Yeah, he's never been checked for that.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly worth checking because maybe I'll give you the link to this if you want. But it's Claire. Oh, it's on eBay? Well, anyway, it's Claire Labs Mastic Gum DGL is something to look at, but it's a lot more expensive. It's like $71 versus $14.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and again, if he does have H. pylori, it could be very helpful because the mastic gum is very good at eradicating H. pylori.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Oh, she said Sacha Inchi. I am Lake Short Organics. Here's one. Let's see. Gelatinized would make it easier to absorb generally. Sacha Inchi. I've ordered him that one too. And I couldn't get him to say which one he liked better. He said they were all the same. But this one is all naturally derived, 17 grams of protein in one serving. That's pretty good. I'll give you the one that Lynn just put in the chat, so you'll see that too.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Such a huge help.
Yes, keep us posted on how he does. It's really hard when your kids are hurting.
I know. I wanted to come to the Shine Conference. I'm so bad, but I can't. I'm so upset.
I wish you could. Oh, we'll probably do it on live stream, so we'll make sure you get an email about that.
Oh,
you can
that'd
watch.
Be awesome. That would be so great.
Yeah.
So great.
We'll do it for your day.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. All right, next time. Put it out there next time.
Yes, thank you. I will.
You're welcome. All right. So that was Chris. Let me put your line down. All right, anybody else? Let me go look to see on the Q&A. I'll refresh it. Okay, so Gail, I have a friend in Colombia that mentioned they use ground alpiste, canary seed milk, for individuals with diabetes or pancreatic ailments with great success. Have you ever heard of this? I've never heard of it. Let me put that into Google and see. Canary seed milk. That's kind of interesting. It's always interesting to see new. Well, I see a lot of Spanish companies coming up. I see it on Leche de Alpiste, canary seed milk. So there's it's listed on Amazon. What do you know? Leche de Alpiste, milk of canary. Canary seed, no silica. It says, let's see. Comes as a powder that you can add to it. Helps with glucose control. I mean, you know, it's a real food. I don't see that it would be a problem to try it. I don't have any experience with it, but I'm always a fan of whole food things that support our body. So, yeah. Gail says bone broth and George's aloe. I don't know. Yeah, aloe is also very good if he tolerates aloe. Aloe can be very helpful for that. And bone broth, I have mixed feelings about bone broth just because of the potential lead contamination. But I know people who have gotten good results with their gut lining. So, yeah, I'll have to look into that. Canary seed milk. Interesting. Thank you, Gail. All right. So chat, Lynn says canary seed is a vegetable that's low in calories. It's become popular around the world. It has high amount of essential nutrients and, can't help. So I think about canary as like bird food, right? So it's just a plant. I'll look into it. It sounds interesting. So always new stuff coming out. Always, always, always. And there are some things, there's some Ayurvedic herbs that, you know, most of us in the Western world are not familiar with because they're not the, you know, the ones that is made press like ashwagandha and rhodiola and things like that. So always, you know, open to suggestions. So we are at time, guys. So I will just refresh one last time. I don't see any more hands. Thank you guys so much for being here. I appreciate it. I appreciate your questions. We've stimulated a lot of really great discussions for those of you who are coming to Shine. Yay. For those of you who haven't gotten your tickets yet, it's not too late. You guys do have, all of you have a bonus ticket. So if you don't already have that link, it's shinelivebonus.com. And for those of you who can't make it this year, I hope to see you next year. And I hope you can make it to the live stream. And we'll announce that in a couple of days. All right, guys. Take care. Open up your lines. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.